in the morning sun. I saw you catch one in pouring rain. And the moment that you wandered far from me, I saw you put one in the net again. And you hooked one in the summer breeze. I'm lost on this lake and you softly leave. And it's me you need to show. How deep is your lure?
Welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast. The Jay Bird.
Stephen Paul.
How are you? Living the dream, they say. No,
that's what you said last week.
It's
the dream continues.
The dream.
Oh, man.
I love it. I'm not
Speaking of the dream, not complaining. Steve, I bought one of your books from my dad, and I sent it over to my dad, and he has just started reading it, but
nice.
He gives a thumbs up so far. Yeah,
very good.
He said congratulations to you. So.
Thank you, Mr. Jay's dad. Why do you guys not have the same last name?
We do, Steve. You can spell it backwards and forwards the same. I don't know if you noticed that.
No, that's awesome. I'm glad you were able to do that for him. Now, I guess we got a couple of those back in stock, but good stuff. Yeah, we're just talking before I hit the record button here. Jay was giving up all the juice before he even got going here. He was spilling out Jay was spilling his beans, folks. Watch out.
Yeah, it was a productive day at the Muskie Shop today.
Beans
for
will be spilled. But a bunch of stuff showed up. Yeah, go down it there. You got the fire down below. Spill the beans.
We got a refill for all those waiting on some Banshee colors, and they are waiting on the Banshee colors.
Nice.
We got limited numbers on, I think, everything. So I don't believe there's one color sold out right now.
There's some poor people in France that didn't get their Banshee order from Livingston. Sorry, Frenchies.
Well, once they start fishing them, they're going to have to order more, right?
Well, oh no, there's just that's color there's too. Nothing left. That's it. That's the whole world global supply, they say. But okay, so you got some.
Yeah, we got a critical critter color in too.
Critical critter.
Yeah, perch was sold out, and we got some more of those somehow.
Yep.
And another surprise double box shipment of Lake X lures, including. Drum roll. Stratocaster string roll. Yes, that'll do. Dr. Evils. It's
nice.
Been about a year. Yeah, we got some Dr. Evils, quite a few actually. And some more Fat Bastards in Northern Lights series as well, which is, you know, it's that version with the.
It comes off.
Super tape on the back.
You can take it off. Let me say this. It's not that if you don't want it, like, right? I've seen guys do this. I have the Northern Lights version, but I want a regular one. It's tape, people. It's tape. You can take it off. I'm just saying. I like the Northern Lights. But continue, Jay. Sorry.
Yeah, it's high-end prison tape is what it is. He's got a name for it. So that was cool. That was a surprise. Those are on the website. Some new color as well. So, we got the Livingston stuff. We got Muskie IQ restock. We talked about that.
Yeah. So do you think on the Lake X stuff, do you have any indication? Is that it for the year? Bring this up because the guys that are looking for Lake X know it's like, okay.
No,
he's not producing.
I think
we
it's actually
really
looking
know.
Pretty good. Yeah, we just haven't heard directly from John, but his coworker that dropped stuff off indicated that there's more coming.
Okay, so, good.
Yeah, we need some Cannonball Juniors and some Little Bees and stuff like that. So hopefully down the road here soon, we'll be getting those too.
Gotcha. Did you get out this?
Keep an eye out on the website.
Did you get out this weekend at all?
It was so cold and windy on Saturday, and it wasn't much better Sunday. It's the last week's been kind of cold and well, windy. I mean, it was so many 25, 30 mile an hour wind days too, on top of like highs in the mid 40s and stuff.
Well, if you're
guys musky fishing, few reports, you know.
That's the same thing, though. When it's that kind of conditions, though, you go, If you don't have to, right?
It's an early season, right? and it's progressing slowly at this point.
Well, that's
long range is looking good.
Yeah, that's the thing. This is going to be a generally slow start. I mean, even here, I've said it's up and down, up and down. This week again, I was just dialed. You know, no missing, no quitting there. You know, just clock working. And getting fish, but it's not that tip. It's not what you expect. It's, if you're fishing the calendar, you're in deep doo doo, you know. And that probably one of the biggest mistakes people make. And I think that's about what's hitting. It's kind of weird with the different timing. So there's people already musky fishing, and you go, okay, is it feast or is it famine? And you've got to think outside the box if it's your first season fishing that early in the Northwoods or whatever you're doing, right? People are fishing, I don't care what you do. But you've got to fish those conditions because, Jay, I was talking to somebody today. They did pretty well up there, and it's like, okay, pre-spawn fish. You're not out there throwing rattle traps. You're not throwing your Booker 500 up in 2 feet of water. You know, it's a whole other bite and a whole other window. I heard from a little birdie that was creeping around on Eagle Lake this week that it's still pretty miserable up there. Right. And so Canada's slow, everything's behind, you know, and it's just, you're going to have to read the water and pay attention to stuff. Josh Krieger, believe it or not, Jay, are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Like, we can take bets. Do you have your book open? Are you going to take... We'll take
my
bets.
My bookie book.
Yes, your bookie book. Is that what?
Yeah, it's right here.
Right, go ahead. We're going to take bets. He says he's going to stay on top of it this year. So Josh is going to do the Northwoods Muskie Report, right? He had a hiatus there. Life comes at you fast. So he should be doing the weekly, at least a report before you're heading up to the Northwoods of what's taking place right then and there, right?
Well, excellent. Good.
Yeah, excellent. We'll see. Taking bets, Jay. He says he's solid. Let's see. I got five. Do I buy the short? Who knows? We'll find out. You know, do you short that stock? Yeah. Now he
gets super tied up, I'll try to fill in for him if I can.
Whatever we got to do. But people want the info. But spoke to him this week. He's out doing some docks and lifts, right? Cold.
Mm-hmm. Like Eagle River area, right?
Cold. Oh, well, he's all over the place. So, I mean, he's not just doing one body of water. That company he works for, leaving that part out. But when you're doing those installs, you're going to this lake, and then the next, you know, that job's done, you're going to that lake, and you're bouncing around doing a tremendous amount of different bodies of water.
Yeah.
His take is you've got 40s on a lot of stuff. Low fit. You've got cold water everywhere.
Yeah.
And
it froze again last night. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that expectation that people had, I think, of the new season's open, it's just going to go out there and be gangbusters, a little different, you know, a little different. But I think as we ease into it, you know, you're going to see that the entire North, whether it be Wisconsin, Minnesota, definitely Canada, just you've got to pay attention to what's happening in the moment. Don't fish the calendar. That's the whole point of don't go out and go, oh, it's my week in July. I always go 4th of July weekend, and we always catch them on double tens. Probably not this year, buckaroo. You know, and think about fishing the conditions, not the calendar. That's the biggest mistake you can make, and it's shaping up to be one of those years. I mean, I can never remember one year to last, Jay. Was it last year was kind of normal? Weren't we going, this is kind of normal, or I don't remember. One of these years was kind of normal.
Clearly, I can't specifically either. Yeah.
I can't remember what I did.
I thought it was a normal ice out last year. I thought it was fairly normal. But it was a slow warm-up again. It's a little bit slower than normal.
The global warming.
Yeah.
That'll get you. That'll. Who knows? You have a cool down first. I for one, vote for the next ice age, Jay. That's just me. Or whatever that comet, if it could just hit Earth now, it's fine. Have you seen? I had to guess.
Warm things up.
I had to guess the boat and the truck. Let the comet come, folks.
Like you had to put gas in the boat and the truck?
Simultaneously go. Bring on the meteor.
Yeah.
We got a ton of fun to get to this week. So let her fly. Ben should have been a DJ, Jay. I'm just saying, well, you know.
You sound like one sometimes.
I feel like one. out of a job.
KLR presents.
You dialed in.
Ben.
Hold on. As an aside, I got to say this. I'm walking through the dystopian hellscape that is known as Walmart the other day. Right.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And so fill me out on this. We come out of the 80s and the 90s where the local DJ was the tastemaker, right, Jay?
Yeah.
Then we get satellite radio. They try to have DJs, and the satellite radio falls off a cliff, and now it's just streaming, right? And everything's died off. I'm in the Walmart, and they now have DJs talking. Maybe it's a test market, but it was creepy. It's like, hey, this is Patricia, I'm your DJ here on Walmart. And so it's like Walmart radio, but with a DJ.
Oh,
and it's like, really bad.
You think it's AI DJs?
It's got to be something, because it's like, this goes out. I literally was just like cringing, where it's like corporate soulless hellscape. Like,
yeah.
Right? Where we have the computer that goes by the name Patricia sending a big shout out to all the hardworking associates in the deli. This song goes out to everybody cranking out the meat in the deli here at the Walmart deli. Visit them for 29-cent croissants. Shout out to the deli department. Keep on rocking. It was just like everything in your body cringed of just like, this is the grossest corporate thing I've seen or heard in a long time. Right? The fake DJ giving shout outs to the deli while they plug croissants for sale.
Kind of gross, Steve.
kind of gross.
Well, as a matter of fact, I mean, I was just kind of doing a deep dive over the weekend with that, you know, Rick Beato's channel, or Beato, or how you pronounce it. He had Butch Vig on a while ago, and kind of was rewatching that, just kind of revisiting the old, you know, early 90s days, especially late 80s and stuff like that. And this is, a lot of people disagree with this, hopefully not, but it's just like back then, you know, there was no Pro Tools. It wasn't done on a computer. There were actual musicians
now
performing everything.
I can parlay that to fishing, by the way.
How's that?
Well, where you're going is interesting on the topic of, so if you don't know, let's catch everybody getting up to speed. So Butch Vig is the guy that produced Nirvana's Nevermind and Siamese Dream by the Smashing Pumpkins. He's from Madison, Wisconsin. Jay knew him and worked with him, but he's like super famous producer. So he's not a musky angler that I'm aware of. But if you know, there's your primer on who Butch Vig is. But you go back to that era, Jay.
Yeah.
That's why you had session musicians. That's why you had guys that were rehearsed. It wasn't, you can't fix it in the moment, right?
Right.
I say that in musky fishing because I almost started off just to ramble about it, but I thought I wouldn't touch it. And here you've brought this thought back up again. I was trying to be gracious. You brought up YouTube and you brought up that, which is, I dealt with a couple instances of, well, on YouTube, they do this, right? On YouTube, I've seen this. That's fine. Okay. There's nothing wrong with that. But that's not a real experience. You are seeing something that is manicured. You're seeing something that is produced. You're not seeing the real deal, right? I don't mean that the information is not the real deal. I don't. But the experience, you did not experience it. And it's very weird where I run into this, and it's more and more and more. And it's not just one instance. It's just like cumulative, where viewing and watching and intaking is not experience. And that's a whole other weird rabbit hole.
It's, yeah, they call it consumption.
Consumption, you don't know. Well, I learned this on this, but you've never... how do I put it? You can learn something, but then you have to perfect it. And it's like you're saying on the music thing, well, we're in a world where if I go la da 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 blah, I can tune that to whatever I want. You can grab in the computer, you can tune it and tune, if you guys know what auto tune is, it fixes the voice. You can't do it on the boat yet. Right? So how to do this or absorbing this information, and thank God we can't because it's still a physical act. If you have to go out and do it, well, this is, you know, I'm making a gross generalization here. Well, I learned figure eights from this video, and then the figure eight is nowhere near competent, right? You might have watched it. You might have watched 100 hours of it, but you're still not doing it right, or you're still not executing, right? Which is a weird slippery slope where you say it now, because we are in a world of pretty much everything else where you can go, I can't sing, the computer will fix it, right? I can't write. I mean, I was literally on the phone with one of the people that filled the stream earlier today, and you go, well, you know, they still check everything. There's no AI there, right? I don't use AI other than spell check for stuff on that front. But you can get this stuff to just crap out an article. And it tends to branch into the way that people think. And like I said, I've seen it exposed on the boat already where it's like there's a gap there, because like what you're saying on the Butch Vig thing of like, well, people had to play. Well, that's the reality of it. It's not manufactured. It's not glossy. So if you're taking in information, you're watching YouTube videos, like that's not it. There's still another layer, right? Does that make any sense? You follow me? Maybe I'm rambling.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. You know, the number one point separating the two eras musically, like Billy Corgan was saying, you know, Pumpkins were notorious for Jimmy Chamberlain was a great drummer, still is, you know, but they did not play to click tracks. Click tracks, you can sync, you know, to computers and have things perfect, and you can make it absolutely seamless. Exactly, right. There's a push and pull with their tempo, and without that, it would not sound the same if it was done today in perfect time. So. Yeah. That's part of the manufacturing process.
Well, everything's
like real is one thing, you know.
Well, it's real, and that's where my brain's going, is like, what's real and what's not real? That's just the overarching social commentary, but also to consider in fishing too. Whereas I don't even know. I've not heard somebody else put it, maybe like a Jordan Peterson or someone put it really well, but just because you watched it or because you read it or because you did this is not knowledge, right? It's like you have to have experience, and you can't forego real world experience for absorbing through osmosis something else. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, and the other thing is this, heck, if you, there's a bunch of music nerds to that point of like, that's how you get style too. I mean, if you talk about learning guitar, of like, I'm from the era of there were no tabs and there's no freaking sheet music. You could go buy a fake book at the music store. We'll talk about stuff nobody knows what we're talking about, but you had to sit down and learn off of a record, and not a record. I'm a tape and a CD guy, but you generally
many did.
Yes. Yeah, you tended to learn it wrong, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like even like.
Mm-hmm.
Like that line out of Breakdown from Tom Petty.
Right. It sounds not, like it, but it's not accurate.
It's not right. It's not the same fingering. I get to say fingering on the show, Jay. It's not the same fingering. So, but anyway, where you learn that, and you can, it's one of these things of like, you said that, and it's so important to build style, right? Where from a musical standpoint, okay, I learned that phraseology, that fingering wrong, but it's the same voicing. We'll get off the rabbit hole, musky people, in a second. But it's the same thing, right? It's the result is the same, but there's a different choice there, and that's where I think it really comes into play. On the execution part of the musky fishing thing, and if you look at like, it all ties together, but like parlaying into the book, half my brain's been here. It's like, you have to go do it. You have to think right, and you have to figure it out, right? Where there's a lot of stuff where now people are just like, oh, this is what you do, and this is it. There's no That's the answer. I got my answer from the tube of you.
Sure. You're right. Watching somebody absolutely rip soft plastics, right, where that might be overdoing tempo-wise, and, you know.
Right. I mean,
that might be the wrong thing to do.
Well, and that's
most of the time.
That's perfectly put, because that's how you do it, right? That's a phrase that gets used a lot, which, well, that's how you do it. No, that's how they did it that day, right? That's how they did it that day. And yeah, they caught a fish, or yeah, they didn't. It's not, but, and that's perfectly put, because keep it at one of my baits. But there's a Titan thing, and the guy saw this with this other guy doing it, and it's a guy that was fishing in a, it's not even me in the video, it's a guy that's fishing on a bank, fishing on a river, right, and catches one, is like, oh, you just run it into rocks. Well, that's what he did that day, right? It's not absolute, and I don't know, I guess now it's like, okay, that's absolute, and it is, it like the perception of, well, I saw it. I saw somebody else do it. That worked. That's how I'm going to do it. Opposed to, there's a lot of different ways to do it, and you have to develop style. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. That ain't working. That's the way you do it. Muskies for nothing, and your chicks for free.
And your pike for free. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Moving on.
You could definitely translate that into figure eighting too.
Approaching,
you know, charging muskies too. It's, you know, by watching different videos.
Well, okay. Like, let's
you can go way down that rabbit hole.
This rabbit hole is running deep, which is, here's the thing here. You watch me. I'll pick on myself. You watch me do this on YouTube, right? Okay. That worked that day. That's not the only way to do it. Like you said, speeding up. Here's the big eat and the figure eight, right? Here's the big eat and the big this, that, and the other. It's not every eat is that. You don't see the finesse. You see the clickbait. You know what I'm saying? And so not everything is a clickbait bite. And like you said, in the figure eight stuff, it can't be super you know, we live in a world of everything's turbocharged, you know, how crazy can it get? We're in turbo mode.
Well, if you watch a video too, it's just like, there's a lot, and this goes for big pike too. I mean, I see stuff on Instagram with Savage Gear and stuff like that, where they got monsters coming up and taking a swipe at a bait. They're not necessarily hooking them, or they follow and they show themselves a couple times in the figure eight process, but they don't get them. But it's like, holy, you know, that was a huge fish. You know?
Right, right.
Look cool, but they didn't. Whatever they did,
didn't work.
Yeah, it didn't put two and two together and put the fish in the net. So,
Well, it's goodness. Didn't know I'm sorry, we're rambling, folks, but it's one of those deals where also to start separating fishing entertainment from fishing information. Right? There's a lot of people that are fishotainment. A lot of them. Right? A lot. Where, you know, they can't put a sentence, they can't put a sentence together about this or that. They can't, you know, I'm not picking on anybody. This is all a fish. It's not just musky fishing.
You understand the difference between entertainment and teaching, because, you know, it's just like, even with the entertainment, you can get a lot out of it at times. You know, if it's analyze what that guy did to, you know, convert.
But is it entertainment? Or is it, and again, it doesn't have to be educational per se, but is it, and that's the freaking whole other rabbit hole, which is like with social media, you're the product, right? The whole thing is not for you to have anything to take away from it. It's not for you to walk away and have a good response or a bad response. It's just that you're there because you're being marketed to, right? So it doesn't matter the quality thereof. It's just like, are you clicking and are you watching? Right. That's the rabbit hole we've gone down from. You look at, and let's just say YouTube, you look at the early stuff when people were first on there. Heck, let's not even say that. 5 years ago, what was there and what we've gotten to now. 5 years ago, 6 years ago, was still new episodes of Fishing with Joe Bucher, right? Joe Bucher reloaded, right?
So, I love that, Steve. Right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Haven't heard that in a while.
Fishing with JSE, retarded.
Yes, it is.
Sorry.
God. They threw a bait and filmed it.
There he goes in the trees again. Join Jay.
Do you ever catch anything when you go out there with those lure demos?
Oh, God. That,
not too often.
Anyway, not living the same. That's why I say living the dream. Walk up the boat ramp. What did you catch you one? What are you fishing for? Sharks? But
got that today.
Got every day. But if you look at what was the consumable, and we'll keep that. I was talking overarching YouTube videos with fishing. I'm not picking on Muskie when I say, is it fishing entertainment, whatever, but specifically now go to Muskie videos, right? 5-6 years ago, it was television style Joe Bucher videos, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of that. Sure.
Very, very much still had the flavor of TV, and it was starting to change into a little bit more first person, and now we've got into get it done in 35 seconds or less. What's the takeaway? And I think that's we didn't plan this, but here we are. Which it's a different thing. Of a lot of it has become fishotainment or musketainment, right? Where, you know, you look at it and you flip through it and you go, I can't remember. Man caught big fish. That's all you can remember. Right? It's it's not, there's nothing there. When they say brain rot, it's so spot on. You know, oh, big figure 80, big muskie caught, big topwater crush. Just name it. It's a spiraling cacophony of dog shit. And tell them how you really feel. But
I imagine if you get right now, whether it's TikTok or Instagram, those two especially, if you go down an algorithm hole and you get stuck on this stuff, and what's going to happen is you're going to get saltwater stuff mixed in there too.
Yeah.
And it's like,
there's nothing wrong with it. I'm just saying it's just,
no.
Yeah.
But
you know, you end up there. This is just what it is. Of like, you got to kind of look at, are you trying to I guess the takeaway, Jay, since we're just riffing here, is are you trying to apply fishotainment to your muskie trip? Have you been victimized by fishotainment? Right? Are you
sounds like an infomercial?
Right? Are you figurating? Is every figure eight lightning? Right? Is every response over the top? Is every rip of a rubber bait as hard as you can do it? Is every bucktail retrieve a burn? Right? That's the thing, because I mean, I had a discussion and completely unrelated, but Meredith, guy in my boat yesterday, good dude, had caught muskies years ago, getting back into the game. I had to stop the boat and I told him, right now, there's a gap between what you want to happen and what will happen. Right? There's a gap between that. This is what you want. This is the reality of the situation. There's a large gap between the two of them. The only way to close that gap is for you to change what you're going to do and what you're doing, because the muskies are not going to fulfill what you want to happen. Right? You want high octane action. You know, that's what he wants. You pay for the whole boat ride, but you only need the edge.
It's sensational.
Right.
Sensational sells.
And he had been watching YouTube videos. That's another, but it's here's what we think will happen. Here's what we see happen more so than the reality of the matter, that there are times that finesse is what matters. And I think that's the thing of like, if you see so much of that, I guess is where we're going, where you see so much of this, it's big topwater eats, big rubber crushing, right? Devastating musky hits.
Explosions.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Right.
Death, chaos. Yes.
Remember that death metal thing we did? That one intro with all...
Yes. That needs...
Dark mayhem, chaos.
Exactly. Yeah. There's too many... There's... I love... That's... Heck, we're in a sport of just... bait companies that sound like death metal bands and chaos. Baby Destroyer. But you have all these, all of that, and looking at the reality of it, where I go, how many times does that happen in a given week? How many times is that my reality? I'm out every day. I don't see the explosive topwater crush. They came unglued.
You want it to happen, but you have to sit back and understand, and most of us do, that it's just something you are going to be waiting for.
And it's not going to happen every week. There's the bite is different. The way they respond, you don't always get what you want. You get what you need.
Sure.
But, whatever. My God, we should have just answered this guy's question 20 minutes ago and shut up.
Poor guy. You got him hanging on. I can't even remember what he asked.
Yeah. Ben, I'm relatively new musky angler with a limited amount of catches and releases. With one of those contacts leaving a wicked cool scar from getting raked from a tooth. As I was watching some... Sorry. I'm not laughing at his question. He says he's watching some musky YouTube content. There's nothing wrong with that. Just don't think every strike's Bone Crusher McGee. But notice many anglers hold the fish during a thrash while working on the hook. A quick Google search recommends you always let go of the fish in these scenarios. But that is for sure. Okay, so we have this... Wow. And this is the way this always works. It's like just the vibe of stuff. Do I trust YouTube or do I trust the Google search on how to handle a muskie? Wow.
Did he say taking out the hooks while you're holding the muskie?
Now we're talking, right? So he's watched a video of guy's got his hand in a fish. I noticed when he said, hold the fish during a thrash while working on the hook. Okay, so we got a hand in the fish, we got a bait in the mouth, and now we got pliers. Do we hold on to them or let them go? Or the Google search should drop them back in the net. So let's do this. He does say, his question is it a better school of thought to maintain control over the head, teeth, hooks after getting a hold on the fish in the net specifically, or should you always let go? The way I read, let's clear the air on this. This is how I do it, right? Well rehearsed, well practiced. This has always worked for me. First and foremost, everybody get away from me. So if you got a boat partner, tell them to get away from you. Back up.
Back off. Mm-hmm.
Get away. I'm in the net and I got my workspace. Tools are always handy. Let's cover that. Have your place you're going to land the fish. Blah, 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 blah. Something I would bring up and consider is there are these products now that hold your fish over the gunwale of the boat, like a Net Buddy, and I think these other products that lock onto the yoke of the net, right, and keep them away from the net. Depending on your stature, depending on this, you're probably going to need to get that net closer. That's a question I answered on the boat this week where he was having difficulty releasing fish, and it's like I couldn't reach it. Out of it, you know what I'm saying? Because now the yoke is away from the boat. What I'm attempting to do is I want to get over top of the fish. Everybody's not behind me. If I need to snap back, I can. And the first thing I'm doing is I'm assessing. I'm looking, right? What's going on with this fish? Is it all rolled up in the net when we landed it? Is it head stuck above water? What's going on? So what's going on right now? You got your tools. If that fish is hooked and its head is above water and there's a hook in the net and there's a hook in the fish, cut the hook immediately. Get the fish in the water. Number one. Mm-hmm. Number two, when I'm working on a fish, I do not have my hand in its head and I don't have my hand on the fish. Right? Fish is in the net. Fish is down there. It's got a bait in its mouth. If I needed to unfurl it, if it's rolled up in the net, check. first move. If it's hooked high in the loop and it's or in the net itself and it's suspended, cut it so it's in the water. Fish in water, then assess. After that, I'm going, what's my best game plan? And I'm going to pick a hook and I'm going to work on that one hook. So let's say I got three hooks. Okay. Is there a hook near the fish's eye? Say we got a jake, right? 10-inch jake, very common bait, three hooks. A lot of times they head shoot it. Is there a hook near that fish's eye that I could get rid of? Okay, cut the back hook. Is the second hook in the way? Oh, he's not on that one. He's only on the front one. All right. Is he hooked through the jaw? Is he hooked deep in the mouth? Can I see the point? Then I just clip whatever point. Let's say I see a point sticking out. I'm going to clip that off. Then I'm going to move to the next. Usually if you clip the one that's going through the jaw or something of that nature, you clip that, you grab your pliers on the shank of the hook, we're done. Right? It's generally pretty quick to do it that way. Like I said, hooks are cheap. Muskies are hard to grow. So I'm just going to go in there with my Nipex right off the rip and just go at it. Back. Right?
No.
I was just saying, I mean, total
agreement, you know. Number one, straighten that net out so you have operating space. Make sure you're a comfortable distance from the head of the muskie so you're not almost falling into the water or straining to get there. Keep that left hand or that right hand, the non-operating hand, away from anything. Because that thrashes once, it's hospital time. I mean, it could happen. We have it on video. Sure.
I forgot that was years back. Talk about old format, but we were doing Muskie Shop TV. If you want to see me get stuck by a fish, it happens like grease lightning. Instant. And it went through my thumb and one side out the other. It's on the Muskie Shop YouTube channel. It's gonna happen. If you catch enough of them, you're gonna get hooked. But I had Nipex right there, pop it out, yakety schmackety, kept fishing because I'm a man, and I didn't want to go get it cleaned out because it hurt real bad. But other
than that, tougher than you look,
tougher than I smell. But long story short, I'm gonna assess the fish in the net. I want to get the hooks out of the equation.
Mm-hmm.
I want to get the bait out of the mouth. Well, how can I take a picture and not show everybody what I caught it on? Who cares? Pop a picture of the fish laying in the net.
Yeah, that's dangerous.
That's dangerous to you and the fish.
It is flat out dangerous. I mean, it looks cool, but it's just like now when I see that when people are holding any size,
it's an added risk.
You know, it's a very risky situation.
So
those things spaz out on you after you start holding half the time too, and they coil up, and it's like.
Let me give you my take on that rabbit. There's plenty here to just rabbit hole, and I'll do my best not to go too far afield. Are we prioritizing showing off what bait it ate over the health and safety of the fish? Yes. Because we've got it up, we've got it pictured, right? We've got our glory shot. Most guys, to do that, now we're putting it back in the net, right? To take the hooks out. Or hoisting it right there and holding it up and trying to take the hooks out.
Yeah, so, take a quick picture of the bait in the mouth of the muskie in the net while your buddy's grabbing the tools. Those pictures look great.
If it's that important to you. Right? Sure. I mean, trust me, it's duplicitous in nature. Okay, send me a picture of that bait in the mouth, but don't risk the fish to do that, period. But the handling and the whole thing of like, you're running the risk of holding a fish that is hooked in the mouth, and now you got your hand in the mouth, and now you got teeth. We got a lot of things that can go wrong for you and the fish. So get the hooks out in the net. Then we assess whether we're even going to take a picture or not. All right? Of course you want a picture with it. But there have been many a times where I have grabbed a 37, 38, whatever, get the hooks out, it's hooked kind of bad or whatever, or it's taking a minute to get out, just kick them loose. Because, and I actually, God, I'm not trying to sell books here. There's a thing on handling where I just kind of point some of this stuff out in the new book. But there's a point in your muskie career, in your game, if you've done it enough, you just go, okay, it's better just to kick it out. I don't need another picture of me with the 38. Right? I look, if it ain't freaking 45, they look like dinks if I'm holding them anyway. Right? Kick them out. Let's go. Get it out of there. Right? Unless it's like just, okay, what, pop it, whatever. Another handling thing, and I'm not saying you have to get to that point, but it's good when you get to that point for the overall health and safety of the fish. And what I recommend to do, let's say you have a 3-fish day, Jay, right? Let's go out. You pop one. You popped a 37, right? Cool. Mm-hmm. You pop a 40. Cool. You're taking pictures of both of them. And you watched them swim away. You pop another 37 later. Take the hooks out and then just let it go and see how differently it takes off.
Yeah, right.
What I'm getting at is through experience of handling a lot, let's leave it at that. Experience of handling these things, minimizing touching them, minimizing fooling with them, is markedly different on how these fish take off. And I'm not Mr. Don't Go Have Fun. I hate that self-sanctimonious bullshit some people pull. Well, if it, you know, no. Catch them. If you want a picture, it's your right. Take a picture. But after you got some skin in the game, some time in the game, let one go without taking a picture. Let one go, like, pop the hooks out in the net and let it go.
Pop the hooks in the net and just lower the net a little bit.
And lower the net and see what,
It's a time factor. It's just time like they're suffocating, stress. You know? I mean.
Well, it's time and stress when you pull them out versus you don't pull them out of the water, blah, 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 blah. But I say that because I've seen the difference in, and it's something I advocate now, and this is just another health and safety thing, don't support their tail. Take your picture, put them in the water, and take your hands off and watch them go. You hold them by the tail, they stop. It's not normal. Now, somebody's rolling their eyes going, you got to. No, you don't. If they cannot keep their equilibrium, support them by the tail. Most of them, 99% of the fish that end up in my net, I just put them in the water and they're out of there. Even if they go slow, as long as they're upright and they're mobile, they're out of there. If you hold them by the tail, they'll stay, right? It's like telling a dog to sit. There's something about holding onto that tail. Now you're losing the picture, you holding onto its tail, but that fish is all the better for it, in my opinion. They take off, they're out of there. Something I also mean, just another thing to throw out there, is when releasing these things, it's a great time, and I'm all about, especially if it's a really good fish, real good time to check out your bait, make sure it's kosher, put new hooks on your bait, make sure your line's good, check out your leader, while paying attention if that fish needs support or help. If it comes back up to the surface and it can't support itself, make sure you're there. 5-10 minutes, that's a good time to just, you don't have to wait 10 minutes, but 5 minutes, something like that, hanging out right where you're at, right where you let it go, checking your equipment out, and then looking to make sure that fish is cool, right? If it's up on its side and it's something horrible's going on, then you're going to go into triage mode and grab it by the tail and see if it can't just support itself and support it. But
if you kill that muskie, you're never going to catch it again.
No, but the back to this guy's thought process. You know, I'm not pulling him out of the net with hooks in the mouth. Just not. It's too much of a risk, and it's too much of a risk to you. You can get cut up. The teeth, I've got my scars on my hands are just alive. It happens no matter what. Another thing on handling, I'm a pretty big advocate. If you got to take a picture of a little one, right, you get a 34, get a 35, and you want to take a picture, trout, hold them, right? The fish I'm most afraid of in the entire lake is a 34-inch muskie. Like 34, 35. Yeah, they're
whippersnapper. Oh, a trout hold. You mean like one on the dorsal and one supporting the belly?
I'll grab them up.
What you mean by trout?
Up under the head, behind the head, right?
Behind the head. Oh,
yeah, okay. Up from the underside. So cradle the body on the underside and hold the tail. And I always hold them over the side of the boat. I'll like literally have somebody, all right, I'm going to pull it out and pop it. Boom, boom, pop them out.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
Sure.
and look up a trout hole. Now, it's you want to do that over the side of the boat. So if he flips, he's going right back in. If you got a hole,
he will flip. Yeah,
he will. But I say that because that size fish for me, man, you try to get your hands in a little muskie's head, that's like a meat grinder. You know he's going to flip around and he's going to go crazy and you're going to – I've had my finger sticking out of one's mouth before through the, you know, through the chin and out. And you're like, ah, and you're just bleeding everywhere. So if you got bigger hands or something like that, or you caught a blue billion of them, if you got to get a picture, pop up on the trout hole and send them on your way is the easiest way, and it's less impactful on them. But to summarize that point, man, you just get the hooks out and go from there. Sorry, rabbit holes. Hey, Steve, can't thank you enough for all the information you guys provide. You've become, you're one of the more, very nice accolades. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Not sure if you'll answer a question. It's a pike question. Boo this man. If you're driving to work right now, boo him. Boo. I'm teasing. Boo, public scorn. Just putting so.
Big pike are cool. Come on.
I'm teasing. Well, of course we're going to answer it. So I loosely tie it to muskies by saying that he takes an annual trip to Sabascong Bay. But for pre-muskie opener, we fish walleye in the morning and cast for pike in the afternoon. Obviously catch a handful of muskies because they're everywhere up there. For pike, we fish the shallow weedy bays. He says a specific location. I'll pick that. If you've been back there, you probably know it doesn't get past 10 feet. He says, I can't fathom how many pike must be stacked in there based on the numbers that they catch. So he's in shallow water in the back of bays at the time. He wants to know if I have any inkling. He's wondering what's going on, any insight into what pike are doing when they aren't active. I'm sure they're using suitable structure, but he's basically asking what's happening when these bite windows are off with pike, right? So I've lived this, done this. Targeting pike, obviously hitting the Euro pike and all this stuff. They'll stack up super shallow. And when they stack up, there is a mega ton of them, right? And if you run into size class and you get into, oh my goodness, here's just nonstop, again, 35-inch pike, right? Just, it's like there's a pile of them. Mm-hmm. And they miraculously shut down. They're running out. They're doing the same push in and push out that muskies do, right? The same structural adherence, the same. We're going to come in and feed. We're going to use shallow zones as predatory zones, and then we're going to move out. You'll see size classes change that throughout the day. So if you get on, I've noticed this when targeting pike, let's say you find a weedy area or a shallow area that's productive, you'll see size class changes come in and out, right? Like last time when we were in Holland, on that trip, we had just scuds, Jay, just scuds of like these, not even worth taking a picture with, like probably 27, 28 inch pike, right? You're just like, please stop. Please. Yeah. You got one. Ugh. Right. You just
wanted the next.
Right.
That's when they get physically better.
Once,
where you almost want to take pictures. Yeah.
Exactly. And wherever they're doing filming stuff for Livingston. So the pressure's on and you're going, yes, it's fun to catch these pike, but this is not what we need. And it's bang, 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 bang. Get out of that area. And you know, I was making the calls that day. So like, what are we going to do? First change we get, we're going back to that. All those little rascals disappear, and it's 40 incher and a 46, right?
The first climactic change.
Okay. The bigger pike will come in and push them out. Where are the bigger pike? In that scenario, and a lot of the stuff, they're using far deeper structure, right?
Yeah, they like cool water.
They like cool water, but they run deeper. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing you got. If you're targeting big pike, is that they will run deeper. That it's not a thing to drop back to 30, not at all. And they'll run in out where a lot of the same rules apply on big muskies. The access to deep water. It's a hill I'm willing to die on. You're gonna find your biggest fish near the deepest water on average available to them with structural complexity. Right. Same thing. I've done this in Tennessee, Canada, Netherlands, Bulgaria, you name it, ready to rock. It all works. It's a structural rule where you will find big pike, big muskies adjacent to. Now, for the pike end of things, there's that juxtaposition of deep, where if I'm looking for quote-unquote deep water holding areas for muskies, 20 can be sufficient, right? For bigger pike, you might be looking out 50, 60, right? So that's a thing. But the cool thing is with pike, you have higher numbers to kind of dial in on. So, you know, to answer his question, you have an ebb and flow throughout the day. It's not just the same fish just lingering nonstop. They're still pushing in and pushing out. So when they go inactive, quote unquote, they've usually pulled out. Right, they've gone out to deeper water, and that's what will happen. If you get into, like I said, the slew of small pike, don't give up on that, and circle back to some of those areas, especially if it is adjacent to deep water. Herba, he was looking at West Virginia and Kentucky stocking numbers. Exact numbers are hard to find, but looks like 2016 through 2024 in West Virginia and 2019 through 2022 in Kentucky were bad, as in zero or very few fish were stocked. West Virginia had hatchery issues, and then both affected by COVID. I want to applaud him because he's from Southern Ohio, West Virginia area, right? Mm-hmm. I want to applaud him from not pluralizing COVID. That's pretty impressive because everybody from we're from the same neck of the woods. They're all like, he had the COVIDs. Have you ever noticed that? About rednecks, they pluralize everything. I'm a redneck. They're like, you get that Guns N' Roses cassette tapes over on your cars and stuff, and you'd be like rockins. That's everything's plural, Jay. Pay attention the next time you talk to one. Much like myself, everything's plural. We got the COVIDs.
We don't get them around here too much, though, Steven.
He's done deads.
Yeah, stocking. We were talking about that the other day.
And good news, it looks like they've been very consistent since 2022. Interested in your thoughts regarding these observations. On the same thread, a friend of mine caught a 48 fish in a West Virginia river. He wants me to give perspective on how special that fish is here. Immensely. Let's just throw that out there. So, first point, 48-inch fish in a river in West Virginia. Immensely impressive. So, talk about different eras. Growing up, that's a legendary fish.
Okay.
Fishing the mud, fishing the canal, fishing, you know, going up to the stuff, you know, I won't give away all the redneck places. But that was a rare fish. I can't tell you the amount of time that was spent grinding on cold, miserable days in West Virginia, hoping to get a 30, hoping to get a 35.
Okay.
And people go, oh, well, that's not even big. Well, it's perspective because the fish weren't that big. You know, you're in a new era of super stocking, right? Where they've pumped it full of, you know, you got Stonewall, Stone Cold, Stone Cold Steve Austin Reservoir, all of them, Jay. You know, they're pumping.
Catch and release.
You know, mm-hmm. We weren't eating them. Sorry, everybody. Jeez. We didn't eat them, but I know people that did. But you look at the Sandy, you look at some of this stuff where even stuff up to Parkersburg and some of these guys growing up, it's like Jack Cobb and Bill Crane and Bill Looney and all these guys we knew, they weren't catching 50-inch fish. It wasn't a thing. So, yeah, 4 foot out of the river, great job. Your friend needs to, you need to claw. You should have taken the rod from your friend. As far as stocking, when you miss a year class or you miss time there, depending on bodies of water, my take is on this. You're going to have reduced numbers, but you'll have increased size quality. Quite often, if you have like a bad year class, you'll notice it. And it's, again, if you're fishing a body of water where you're like, all I'm catching is 37s. It's like magically for a couple years, all you catch is 37s. Well, in a couple years, all you'll be catching is 41s, right? You'll see that grouping of fish. And so when you have a gap like that, it leaves a little bit of room in the hierarchy to develop some bigger fish. That's the one plus side of it. you're going to lose numbers and you're going to catch less muskies in general if you're reliant on a stocked fishery, and if especially a pressured fishery, you're going to lose your overall volume, but at least opens up some ability, because you got to realize, you know, fish, when they get packed in a place, Jay, you get overpopulated. I point out Squaw Lake. It's not even a lake anymore, so I can say its name, Jay. Squaw. Right. There was a certain point where, what, 5, 6, 7 years ago, it was still, it was like they wanted you to take your first 36 home or your first 1/38.
Yeah, didn't they imply a 30-inch minimum or something? There was maybe a handful of northern Wisconsin lakes
they're like, did take that it. Too. Yeah.
Right. Where there's like, okay, we got some too many runts in here.
And
not really overpopulated, but stunted.
It stunted the overall size class of even your. You run into these top tier fish that are now competing with resources.
Sure.
So a lack of populace. Now that's 100% natural reproduction, I believe. Correct. Like, I'm pretty sure Squall we were talking about, but you know, some of these lake. I don't think there was any stocking or anything that took place. But whether it be natural, whether it be overstocking, let's say they come into a lake and they dump way too many. The same thing happened. You have muskies competing for resources. You have them competing for essentially home. I don't say homes. Home's a dangerous thing, but competing on the same structures, right? They all gravitate to relatively the same things. And so you'll end up with that. But you should see, like I said, always on the sunny side, you should see a boom in overall size class as time goes on. James. Hello, Steve and Jay. I've been listening to the podcast for some years and wonder why you get with your guys' sense of humor. Why haven't you released a CD of all the jokes and cover songs? Just thought it'd be an awesome thing to purchase at the bash. Hope to see you guys in July. R.I.P. Dick Stimke. Jokes and jokes and jokes. Rest in peace, Dick. I think there's a little nod to Dick in the new book on the last page. Just a tick.
Oh, nice.
Just a little bit there. In the,
His birthday's coming up, too. July 4th.
Dick Stimke.
Born on the 4th of July, baby.
Dick Stimke Remembrance Day.
26 confirmed. Yeah.
Happens to fall on July 18th this year.
With a house ball. 242, folks, Steve. Come on.
First person that dresses like Dick Stimke. Right, you got to go full Dick Stimke. I want to see as many Dick Stimkes as I can there for Dick
Stimke. Full flannel,
The flannel, heavy black mustache, maybe a Packers hat, right?
Mirrored shades, you gotta look cool.
I'll get you something worth your while there, I promise. Just remind me, I'll forget that by July.
You will forget it.
You'll have to go, hey, didn't I'll be
five,
laughing.
5-6 people will show up in line, and you're like, ah!
We're all, it's like Fight Club. His name is Robert Paulson. It's just his name was Dick Stimke. Uh-huh. Anyway. Yeah. No, we're not doing a CD. It's a good idea, but it'd be funny. Maybe someday Jay's original Musky Tunes. All just xylophone covers. Jacob, two questions I think are pretty good. Well, I'll be the judge of that. We'll see. Jay apparently judging the questions out. In spring, it's shallow weeds and warm water. That's all anybody talks about. But the other night, closer to dark, I was out, and there were tons of crappie and gills towards the surface in 10 feet of water, which was much cooler than the shallow bays. Am I better off spending my time targeting these areas with bait or listening to the masses and hitting the shallow warm bays, which didn't have a ton of bait fish? So, great question. You're right. I'll give him that, Jay. Wouldn't you agree? Great question.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I ain't saying that's all you got to hit. Don't listen to them fools. If everybody's doing it, do something else. There's definitely an open water bite in the spring, right? Most people are going to go out there and rattle trap and small bucktail their brains out. But for me, I'll take something like El Critter and Menace into open water, and it's pretty devastating on those panfish bites. The muskies are there. They're using them. It's just different kind of methodologies in different populations. So, if you're seeing
I don't think a lot of bait fish feel comfortable in 3 feet of water too often, you know, and it's what
it depends.
So the 8 to 10 foot thing is they feel safer, and if it's spawning or just conjugating and eating,
that and a lot of that is quite often people, like you're saying, people are not comfortable, or like the bait fish don't jam up that early in the year. Cold fronts, that's one of the biggest things in the spring. You can have a cold front and somebody's way up on the edges. Yeah, you could run into one, but most likely to get off. Second, his question is, he says even arguably better. So the first question was pretty good, Jay. He says this one's arguably better. We'll see. When it comes to majors and minors, do you think that it changes the location of fish? Are they simply more active where you'd likely locate them at that point of day? I can't imagine the moon makes a muskie move shallower to feed. They might just be more likely to strike where they're at. Okay, now we're cooking with gas.
Yeah.
So, does the moon move them? Personally, I don't think so. I don't think a muskie is going to, just based on moon. Hold on, Jay. There are people clutching their pearls right now, right? There are moon diehards.
Yeah,
right, okay. Now, freaking out. They're on the way to Denny's for their fourth burger of the day. Freaking, right? Oh, I got to get some Culver's in me. I almost stopped having a heart attack. But
they're anyway, open 24 hours still, Steve.
They're open 24 hours now to stuff my food hole.
How many heart attacks is that for you, Todd? It's an even baker's dozen.
Baker's dozen.
I don't know. Yeah, go ahead.
Right, but nonetheless. And then we go back, I'm shilling books here. You go back to Next Level Muskie Fishing, and I do it in a duplicitous manner. If you haven't bought it, so you don't have to read it. I write the moon, my assessment of moon phase, twofold. You will see timing arise, right? You will see things that click in place. Now, it doesn't click like that all year long right now. Right now, forget about it. What I'm doing and how I'm doing it got nothing to do with old moon, right? But the bite window and the bite that I'm dialed in on, pretty rock solid. It ain't failed me yet. So looking at moon as a absolute overarching, it governs muskies, period. This is what they're moonites, right? They're addicted to the moon is not the way to look at it. On the other hand, to look at it as a little bit of seasoning to taste that can affect terrestrial bug hatches, subaquatic bug hatches, things of that nature.
Oh, boy. Okay.
Right? So it's a timing thing. The moon is part of the cyclical nature of nature, if you will, and it is part of blah, blah, blah. The sun will rise and the sun will set until that meteor hits. But nonetheless, if we're looking at it, it's not that the moon will come and the muskie will manifest. It's more of he's going to be somewhere that's already advantageous or anticipating that this location is advantageous, and it will correlate with activity on a timing event.
Yeah.
Right?
Here's my take. You're going to love this.
Hold on. Mute my headphones now. Go ahead.
You're going to hate this. You're just going to be like, God, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Eat it alive.
I don't think the moon's kicking in and the muskies go, oh my God.
There it is, boys. Been waiting.
I got to get to Satchaquan Moosey Goosey Bay Reef as fast as possible.
I'm late.
I feel it. I feel the power. No. They're probably just off. Like they're off the structural element that is a feeding platter for them. A couple flicks of the tails, it's like yum, bam.
Right. They're capitalized exactly. They're not all waiting out in the middle going, where are we headed? I love what you said, that's hilarious. Yeah, we got to get down to Succakong Bay and run our tail. It's time. No.
Yeah, I mean now, Mr.
Now.
Yeah,
exactly. Well, yeah, it is. When is it advantageous? Right. Okay. It's things that we know that everyone can get behind. Low light periods are advantageous in musky fishing. We can all agree on that, right? We can agree that when clouds come in and we have a front coming in, it's advantageous. Now, is that cloud cover lower light? We'll save that argument for another soapbox, right? But you've heard me say it. That's it, right? So low light, low light, low light, light penetration. Now, can that be trumped by forage movement. Absolutely. Right? Muskies can counter shade with their eyes. They can see enough to be in the game. They can force it. They'll come up, eat in high, bright sun. It'll happen. So is there something, i.e. the moon, that kickstarts something in the food chain? Right? And when I say kickstart something in the food chain, if you look at trout fishermen, right, from afar, most trout fishermen probably are driving Subarus. But nonetheless, they know when bug hatches are going to happen, right? They're looking at bug hatches, they're paying attention, and then there's this one-to-one, the trout eat the bugs corollary. When the bug hatch happens, the trout eat the bugs, right?
Sure, if you're a fly fisherman, you got to be in tune with that, for sure.
Right, you can sit there and wear your waders, whatever. You got your outfit. They're like bikers, Jay. They got their outfit.
Costume.
I'm going to put on my costume to go do my hobby. Get your costumes on. It's time to ride the Harley and catch some trout. But no offense, Harley riders. It's the same. It's like chaps. They got their harsh little plastic chaps on.
Easy.
I'm talking about fly fishing. They're wearing chaps. No. But nonetheless. So the bug hatches, trout eats bug. Right? In muskie fishing, we're fishing for a predator. This is the apex predator. Something has happened. Lighting, right? Timing. There's a timing element that has spurred the food chain. Apex predator takes advantage of. Why does that line up on the moon? There's your great question, where I have spent plenty of time making sure that I am analyzing and executing just for $24.99. But when I talk about timing of things, and the overarching, like, get out of the moon conversation, I'll even catch myself here. The way you circumvent the impact of solar lunar effects in muskie fishing is to chalk it up and say, well, the reason that more muskies are caught on solar lunar majors is because people use that as a timing device to go back on places they know are productive, or they maximize their efforts, right? They're more focused during those times because it's kind of dogmatic and it's beaten to our brains. I have spent plenty of time where, okay, I go, let's fish right, let's fish hard, let's do everything we need to do, execute the entire time as if it was life or death the entire time, right? The reason moon still plays, I have seen things happen and fish come unglued for 15-minute windows that happen to correlate with a solar lunar event, major or minor, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now, Dr. Bob is rolling over in his car right now, right? He because Dr. Bob doesn't believe any of this. But
his Subaru just crashed.
He doesn't drive ahead. A Subaru. That's offensive, oh, Jay. Anyway.
You started it.
You started a Subaru. This is going to end up like the Menards thing where I get a letter from Menards. Hey, here's a hat. Stop making fun of Menards. But anyway, long story short, the data doesn't point to it. Right. The hard data of muskie fishing doesn't point to it. It's not colored data, right? Where it's groupthink or it's whatever, because there's massive corollaries between angling pressure and then solar lunar timing, right? Let's say it's the first week of July, Jay, and there's a solar lunar major that happens at 2 p.m. Most muskie anglers are going to be on the water for that. Right,
but it ups your odds. Yeah,
it ups your odds. But now it ups the amount of people there, and then it subsequently ups the amount of contacts through angling pressure. But if you take that away and you kind of look at it like block work, it's different. But last year, here it is. Me and Danny Herbeck are screaming and yelling. You can do whatever you want. You can do whatever you want. You can lay in the floor of your boat and roll around in a box of Fruit Loops. But if you get on it right before the major, it's game on like Donkey Kong. So, personally, what is happening? The muskies are pre-staged in an advantageous manner timing is dictating what is happening on. The moon is not affecting the relative gravity on the lake. That's not true. It doesn't happen. I'm sorry. There is an event that is taking place. There is movement down the food chain or up the food chain, however you want to look at it, from the muskies. And they're pre-staged. So his question are they don't magically manifest because the moon hit. They are pre-staged for an event and a timing event that's going to happen that happens to correlate with the moon. How does that correlation directly happen? Something, you know, but it's not the pull of gravity. That's something that's been, that can be dispelled because there's no shift in elevation. There's no change in water level on the lake level, right? In a solar lunar event that's measurable. It's been done. They tried it on Lake Baikal. That is the world's largest freshwater lake. It's still not enough water for it to matter, right? But obviously, we look at the driver of the moon with the tides. So something's happening there. But to the crux
you
of
said,
that.
You said gravity, Steve? Is there...
It's not real.
I mean, it's not... Is don't there believe microscopic in changes in gravity?
What?
That occur? I mean, I don't know.
Oh, what were you asking? Sorry, I was laughing at my own jokes.
Are there microscopic changes in like, gravity?
Well, it would be like an incremental change. What I'm saying is obviously the pull, and I'm going to bastardize it here for make it lesser than or just simplistic. So as we change our distance from the Earth and the moon, right? There's pull and yaw on the seas because that's most of our surface areas. That's what creates your waves or your tide, right? So it changes the levels. Our distance from the moon and the relative pull that we have on one another, these two bodies in the cosmos, right? That same mechanic that is changing sea levels throughout the course of the day is not effectual enough to be measured in freshwater.
Okay.
So it's not the like when I crawled into the rabbit hole of this on the first book and actually was making phone calls to oceanologists and people, anybody that give me the time of day that is like, I'm not talking your buddy Lenny down at Culver's drive through. Oh yeah, the tide's in, muskies are biting. I'm talking like PhD level people. There was very little information, B, pretty much people got no way, right? And there have been studies where people have heard about this corollary between muskie feeding and solar lunar data. There's a few things online where people just absolutely canonize it. They ordain it and say, this is it. And it's like based on small sample size or their weekend trip with their buddy Larry. Okay, whatever. But the hard data is just non-existent. And like when I say the changes at sea, or not quote unquote sea level, but at water level on Lake Baikal or Lake Superior, there's not enough measurable change. So it's not happening on your 500 acre lake, right? It's not happening in such a manner where there's actual a change in the forces applied to the surface of that water, where the water is actually changing its level or it's changing. There's no change in the water based upon our position relative to the moon and its gravity and our gravity and yada, 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 the mechanics at work there.
Okay. Scratch that off. Gotcha.
Right.
Okay.
So that's why it's a mystery. And then in next level in that book, that's why I went, listen, there's a thing happening. Right, it happens too often for it to be completely thrown out with you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. There's timing events that happen. Now those timing events change throughout the course of the day, but there are things that happen to line up pretty dang close to those windows. Now, let's go down something else. Is that a false corollary? Right. So This is the thought process talking about books where there's people cracking the pages on the new one already where I'm going into basically critical thinking, right? So muskie fishing is a set of experiments and critical thinking. What you want to happen is probably not going to happen. What do I need to do? Right? So everybody, blah, 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 blah. But we often derive false corollaries between these timing events and muskie activity. The moon is,
I believe that. Yeah.
The moon is drastically colored. Not a corollary, but colored. We've shaded the moon. We've checked all the boxes around it. We have really skewed the data so hard because so many people were living and dying by it. Therefore, you're going to go fish the major. Nobody wants to miss the major. Nobody wants to miss this. So throughout the course of the day, it's hard to really gauge what's happening. Where you look at Bob, who is, I trust his data. He's looked at mine. I've looked at his. We've shared data. We look at other guides' data. Yes. Something that I'm going to put together. I probably have threatened this before, and Bob's, again, shaking his fist at me as if I could load him up more. At some point, is I just need to get everybody's data, which is, and we could do it even at the podcast, which is all you need is the location and the time.
Well, I mean, last season, I think if I remember correctly, the first half of last season, there was an extraordinary amount of high activity outside of some lunar, you know, times.
Well, and like I said,
am I right? Or was it?
No, yeah, it was locked.
With Danny and
it was locked in. Locked on the major. But again, you look at effort. And that's what I'm saying. The coloration of moon phase is also effort. Was I going, once that kind of locked in, was I going to miss that? Had I skewed the data by being sure that I was on places that had fish during those timings? Guaranteed I did. So the data skewed immediately from my own actions, my data from last summer, because I believed that it was going to happen. Therefore, I skewed the data by making sure I was on places that I knew were holding muskies or there should be active muskies at X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, look at where the data is coming from in terms of, you're talking about a muskie, a really solitary, low numbers kind of fish. Yeah, if you're not on fish.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying.
How important is the data, you know, in that particular situation? It's not bass fishing.
Right. Well, with that thought. I think that answers his question, but good God, I apologize, but that's one of my favorite things of kind of breaking down the, it's not about the catch, it's the why or the thought process, if you haven't noticed, but you know, a lot of it, like I said, is how much are your own actions skewing the data? So at some point to get as much, a clean set of data, you know, and to not color that data, you're just going to have to just go from sun up to sundown for an extended period of time with the sustained effort. And yeah, the problem right. is a sustained effort. Anyway, moving forward. Yeah. Greg, jigging with the profile of a swim bait with no tail, or gigging for the profile of a swim bait with no tail, also says, okay, he's asking for a bait here. Okay. It's like a swim bait profile. So I've got something up my sleeve for that. Take your Magnus. I shouldn't tell you this, but take your Magnus. I do it all the time. Cut the paddle off and stick a freaking blade in the tail. And that's something I've been cooking up here. That's my vertical jig that I use now. It's money. So you can vertically, literally just cut the paddle off on the small body. You take your freaking cotter pin, a swivel and a blade, and you got a devastating vertical jig that has the hard head. Yeah, you
know, heavyweight setup,
and that you can change the weighting on it. Yeah, so sure. That more on that later, but that'll give you the jump. Jacob, I was reading your book, specifically the night section, where I saw that I should keep light to a minimum. The front of my boat has red and green light strips for the nav lights that shine into the water. Would this be an issue for spooking fish? Yes. So I have heard a lot of debate on light from a lot of different people. I spent more time than I care to even admit fishing for muskies at night back in the day. I used to embarrassingly, you know, I'd be done with a guide trip, go sit in my car and eat a Culver's burger like the rest of them, and then head back out, right? Had no life. I was still real mad at them, Jay. You know, had to catch them. Had to.
Yeah.
You know.
And what does the data speak to that effort?
Data speaks that effort is there's a lot of mosquitoes. You should probably get a life and you need to turn the lights out. So I've heard the coloration of lights doesn't matter, but I've also you try to sneak light to be able to see a follow. That was always the game. How can I sneak a little bit of light to see if I got one behind me? And I've heard purple light doesn't affect them. This light doesn't affect them. I've seen them break off from just about everything. It's unnatural. So the way I perceive light, or the way I consider light to be in the evening, consider it to be an unnatural influence. Now, what would I do?
Night vision goggles.
Night vision goggles. That is exactly, that's it, boys.
That's really
now, you got to have your lights on. You can't, and God, I had a close call this week with stupid, yet again. This happens all the time. This is the time of year, I'll tell you guys, especially the Wisconsin guys, you Minnesota guys, just wait for that first warm weekend and watch out. Because you forget, you're all excited to get on the water, and here come the idiots, and here come the jet skis, right? We've already suffered, actually, on the water. I don't know if I mentioned about the fatality on the water. Might have brought up last week. But anyway, right then and there, right there on the water with us, it happens. Now, I'm taking that back to night fishing. It's even worse. And so if you're going to night fish, I'm saying you can't have light, but you have to have your nav lights on. You've got to have something, right? So what I did is I got the tallest red green light that I could, right? And this is going to sound nuts, and everybody's like, oh my God, this is taking it too far. I usually do that. But what I did is I actually just cut a piece of cardboard and kind of put a little collar underneath it for night fishing. And then I've evolved to just a piece of pipe that would keep it from shining down on the water. And okay, so I gotcha. Just had it plugged it in and then just tried to keep it from shining down. So you got this little disc underneath it that would kind of bounce the light back up to keep in it. You'll notice you won't have any glow around your boat. And doing the same thing with my 360 light in the back, the round light, is putting, like I said, the hillbilly way of doing it was just a big disc of cardboard and then subsequently a big...
Cardboards.
Yeah, cardboards. Well played. But put a big disc of cardboard there and duct tapes, of course. You got duct tapes it up there. But nonetheless, you do that and that'll keep from light going down the water. The thing is this, dim your screens. Also, that's just for bugs. I'll say this, if you're targeting muskies at night, side scanner, live scope, that changes everything. But yeah, you got to have your lights on. Josh, quick question about the critter. I was fishing the Shark Attack critter on Wisconsin opener, got absolutely crushed and got the rear blades ripped off. Story of my life. What size blades and swivel are stock, and do you recommend anything different? I tried putting a number one or number eight on the rear. It just seemed to make the bait too heavy. Okay, so that's a little big. So I've heard this. You have this with some of the critters. I apologize. Some people are getting hit and the blades are getting smoked off. So write Livingston an email. They'll send you a replacement set so you've got them. Again, it's one of those things. It's like getting the tail of a swim bait bit off, Jay. It happens, right? They'll smoke them.
Nature of the beast.
It's a little bait. Yeah, but sure. Eric at Livingston, just write an email to the Livingston thing. Yeah. We've got some extra sets. On the next round of those coming, we actually beefed up the swivel because of it. It just is what it is. But it's annoying because they're small blades. There's little tiny walleye Colorados. I don't know the real size of them because do you know where the blades for that came from, Jay?
They might be number threes. Yeah, you go. Very small.
Very small. So check out a two or a three. Other blades that I recommend are just like the small trailer blades you'll find on spinner baits. I have a pile of those laying around where I was cut. Before the meat grinder existed, I had cut those off and made my own meat grinders. And so just that like really small willows seem to work well if you need to go deep. And so what I'm going for, Jay, that's probably about an inch and a half long willow blade or an inch long willow blade. What would that be? You have any clue on
four
size?
Maybe?
Maybe a four.
Probably four. Four-ish, yeah.
And, you know, you don't want to go with a really big blade, right? Mm-hmm. Unless you had a bunch of weight. But small blades, just like a tube where a willow blade will help you run deeper, and it'll change the whole action of that bait. So play around with different blades, but obviously on the critter, smaller sizes. We got the bigger critter. Actually, I was working on that today. Critter Max, Jay.
Ooh, yeah, coming down.
It's like freaking, oh, it's fun. That thing's just ridiculous. But anyway, yeah, check that out. And sorry, yeah, if you have the blades get banged off there, it's kind of like one of those things. It sucks, but it's part of running that bait. So Livingston's good. Yep. He'll drop you a set in the mail there. And hopefully they'll get it where those won't do it. Because I finally had one happen on a production. when this week, believe it or not, same thing. And he was nipping at it and got a hold of the boy. He just like, ah, I thought I had him, and he had, came up and he just nipped it. I guess the swivel was in a tooth. I don't know. But okay. And sometimes they just crush. It's such a small bait. They just annihilate it most of the time. And this thing was nipping like a moron. Dakota, when fishing open water suspended muskies, how do you decide where to start? Do you drive around and look for them, mark schools of bait fish, troll around and look for bait, then come back and cast, or throw a metal tip dart? He said, or throw a metal tip dart at a 12-inch graph and start there. So it's one of those deals for sure. Open water, where to start is always a weird question. If you do not know where to start because there's no signs pointing there, right? Working in grid fashion. If you have to, and I've had days like this where it's like, okay, I've done my 3-point bait check, Jay, right? Mid, shallow, and deep. Guess what? I can't find crap. Right? It happens, right? So
donut hole.
We're thinking deep, probably.
If donut I can, holes.
Donut holes, right. Everything, it's like you're smacking the side of your graph gun. Does this thing still work? You know, does it still doing it there? Is it still
there?
Thing?
Yeah.
Right? Have I forgotten how to do this? You need to refocus and go, okay, it's time to get focused and readdress the day and go, all right, I need to, there's no other better word. When I say add structure, I don't mean the topography, the bathymetry, like I mean structure to what you're doing, right? You need to get control again and you need to do it in a methodical manner. So I'll work an open base, and if I have no starting point, no clue, no context, if you took all my electronics away, I'm going to work it in a grid-like fashion. That means I'm covering specific areas about a cast length, and I'm saturating that area and then moving to the next, right? Visually break it down and go, okay, I'm not going to just go willy-nilly. And that's what I'm saying. You have to have some discipline in open water, because if not, you just end up running hell and half acre. Now, let's say bait fish are at play. We're visually seeing bait fish. They're popping out of the water, or we're seeing them on our down scan, or we're seeing them on live scope. We know there are bait fish in the open basin. Cool. Work the outside of that first. Yep. Work around it, right? And assume that muskies are staged around schools of bait looking for fish to screw up and leave that zone and get picked off, right? So I actually work schools of bait in a circular manner. Like I'm making concentric circles and narrowing down and getting closer and closer and closer and closer. The thought is, if there's a muskie in that school of bait would not be there. Caveat. Sometimes there's a muskie in that school of bait and he's not doing anything. He's just shepherding. And the bait's wholly unaware and they don't care. You can run into that, especially in the fall. You'll see that, right? You'll see that shepherding thing of they're like, okay, it's not the solar lunar major right? Or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's waiting for his timing event, but he's there. And it's the same thing. It's all parlays, Jay. We were talking about, is it solar lunar? Why are they're there. They might not be eaten yet, but they're there. What's the proximity to that food source? So, and another tidbit I'll throw out because I have been in a little bit of open water stuff this week. Don't be afraid to bottom bounce to under schools of bait. That's highly overlooked, but baits like the Kraken and primarily this time of year in open water, it's devastating as the menace, right? All right, here's a suspended school of bait. Let's say you're in a basin, school, this is a 20-foot deep basin. School of baits, it 10. It's not a big move for a muskie to just crawl bottom under school bait. They don't all have to be suspended. So the bait could be suspended, but the muskies can be on bottom. So that gets overlooked. It's not the first thing I'm going to do, but if you're definitely like, okay, they're in open water, they don't spend the whole day suspended. Mm-hmm. And so that's a place to look. But like I said, when I'm breaking down open water, I'm definitely thinking about menace, like I said, this time of year and going, all right, this is going to allow me, I can rip it, pull it, keep it up high, I can tube it, you know, I can do the tube thing and have that versatility. But like I said, concentric circles, if you're around the bait fish, and then if you're not getting any joy, start checking bottom in the zone around them. And what I've often seen is like, let's say you have the nebulous cluster of bait. Here's the bait fish. How far away from that on bottom would it be? It's pretty close. And I think what they're doing, I can't attest to it. I can't say I've watched them do it. I've caught them doing it, but I can't say why or how they're doing it. But I think they're just move with the bait fish, set back on the bottom, kind of cat and mouse. You know, they're going to stay there. They're not going to elevate and predate until they've got the light advantage or they got a reason to. But I think they're moving along bottom, just watching that school of bait. Okay, the bait school stop, and they'll just stop adjacent to it. So it's like I'll work away from the bait school on the bottom back to the school, right? Try not to disturb the school, because I think it's theorizing, but it's what I think I've seen in action is like if you disturb that bait school, obviously the muskie's going to follow with, right? And that's just kind of the school of thought there. So break it down in grid-like fashion. Like I said, probe all the water column too. Good rule of thumb in open water fishing, he's not going to be above the bait fish he's predating on. Right?
Yeah, makes sense. Right.
Yeah, they feed forward and up. Let's say you see one on your down scan, right? Muskies stand out like pretty dang good on down scan. Let's say you see a bait school, you know, at 10. And you see a muskie at 5 or bait at 15 and a muskie at 5, he's probably not eating that, right? Or you see him on scope, or you see him on side scan or whatever. If they're higher than the bait school, they're probably doing something a little bit different. Don't draw a false corollary that they're on this open water bait, but they're actually staged above it, right? Now, one could argue, are they staged above it in anticipation of them coming up? Quite possible. Right. But if I see that and I'm in the moment and I'm going, okay, I'm not worried about what's going to happen. I want to catch one now. Or I want to catch him now. I'm going to fish above that target. I'm going to go, okay, is he targeting something that's at surface? Is he targeting something that's bigger than this bait school? Because why does this fish not have interest in this big school of perch or this big school of shad or this big school, of whatever? Why is he not all over that, right? Now, if you run up on one fish that's doing that, he could have just eaten. There's a litany of reasons. So in that one moment, but where you go, okay, that singular fish could have, would have, should have. But I'm saying overarching conceptually going, okay, if the bait is lower than the muskies, it's often a time to just kind of switch gears and go, okay, they're doing something different than what I think they're doing, right? Or they're targeting a different prey source. So anyway, that's just the thing. And in the moment, obviously you're going to chuck at them, but don't be afraid to like make a complete readjustment right then and there.
You said baits a minute ago. I can't unhear it now.
Anyway, baits. Got them. You got your Tinder tapes. The only times I've heard the word, the phrase or whatever, the grouping of words, Tinder tapes.
I don't know how talk to me.
You playing them Marios on them Tinder tapes? Oh,
I don't even know what that means.
That would be, are you playing Mario Brothers on your Nintendo cartridge?
I understand.
Right. Tinder tapes. Yep. Playing them Mario Brothers. Well, it's already for me. Playing them Marios.
Yeah,
it's
funny. Anyway. That is funny.
All right, Jaybird, say a Vita.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one. Bye.